It was also said to have performed the most valiant deeds and enjoyed the wisest constitution of all that have come to our knowledge. You therefore lived, Greece that is, under the protection of such laws as well as of an excellent administration. And he's chiding them for being so dumb they didn't write it down. But the Egyptians kept a record of everything, so now the story from Egypt's going to tell them their history, you dummies, Greeks being the dummies. Many of your great deeds that have been recorded here are admired. One, however, stands out from all the others through its greatness and excellence. For the records mention the great power that your state, Greece, once vanquished. A power that came from the Atlantic Ocean, beyond, and that invaded in its arrogance the whole of Europe and Asia. For the sea there was navigable at the time. There was, beyond the strait you call Pillars of Hercules, Straits of Gibraltar, an island larger than Asia and Libya together, from where it was still possible then to sail to the other islands, and thence, from those other islands on the other side of Atlantis, to the whole continent on the other side, which encloses the sea, truly named after it. Now, we're centuries before Christ. The view of the world that dominated in Plato's time had its origins in the old Sumerian Babylonian viewpoint of the world. The world, filled with celestial air, lies in the crystal celestial citadel, which floats on the celestial water. And the celestial citadel, supported by the zodiac, resembles a bowl filled with the water of the bitter lake on which the earth's disk floats. The sky radiates its light above it. Below it is the city of the dead. And to make a long story short, if you sailed and got out of this, you went into death. Herodotus, the Greek historian, drew a map of the world much like this circular view of it sitting in a bowl. The Mediterranean Sea was center. Get closer if you can. Asia and Europe and Africa represented the whole world of them, surrounded by water. And as you sailed out these Pillars of Hercules and came to the edge, you entered into death. The reason the early Phoenicians could attempt to sail around Africa and up to the Persian Gulf is it was generally accepted in Herodotus' day you could sail all the way around this borderline, except for the cold to the north. You could sail, or the cold to the south. It was assumed as long as you stayed on this shoreline, you could sail around. Nobody in Plato's day would conceive of going off the edge of this any more than they would conceive of going off the edge in Columbus' day. The earth was flat, and the center of the earth was this Mediterranean lake, and the great sea surrounded the earth. Yet in this story, with perfect geographic precision, they are describing and go through the Pillars of Hercules or Gibraltar. There is a great island bigger than Libya and Asia combined. Here's Asia and most of Libya, as they saw it. Bigger than all of them combined, and on the other side of it, islands. So we're to the Caribbean islands and Bermuda. And then beyond that, a continent that completely surrounds the great ocean that is named Atlantic. Perfect geographic precision, when it was impossible to think that frame of reference. Which is why it's ludicrous to think he was just making up a parable. He was telling the story as he heard it. There was beyond the strait you call the Pillars of Hercules, an island larger than Asia and Libya together, from where it was still possible then to sail to the other islands, and thence to the whole continent on the other side, which encloses the sea truly named after it. For everything that is situated on this side of the strait, Gibraltar, of which we are talking, appears like a bay with a narrow entrance. That sea may properly be called an ocean, and the land enclosing it as properly a continent. On this island of Atlantis, there existed a great and admirable kingdom, which had taken possession of the entire island as well as of the other islands, and of parts of that continent, which would be North and South America. In addition, of the land situated this side of the strait, it ruled over Libya as far as the borders of Egypt, and over Europe as far as Tyrrhenia, or Tyrrhenia. This mighty power once tried to subdue both your country, that is Greece, and ours, that is Egypt, because it was an Egyptian telling the story, and everything situated within the strait in a single attack. At that time, O Solon, the power of your state, Greece, became clear to all, shining in valor and achievement. For the Greeks were the leaders of all the countries, and surpassed them all in courage and fighting skill, and when the others defected, they were thrown back on themselves alone, and were exposed to the greatest danger from this attack from Atlantis. But they beat the enemy and celebrated a victory. They also saved those not yet subdued from defeat, and generously restored the freedom of all the others that lived within the Pillars of Hercules, that's Mediterranean side. But later, when there came violent earthquakes and floods, the entire valiant generation of your people was swallowed up by the earth. And the island of Atlantis was similarly swallowed by the sea and banished in a single dreadful day and in a single dreadful night. This is why the sea is no longer navigable there and cannot be crossed in ships, because this is prevented by the very deep mud, the remains of the island when it sank. And the Azores, those little peaks of mountains that come out of the Atlantic Gulch, used to be higher than Everest, by this theory. And the whole Atlantis sunk. Now, it's pre-flood. And after Genesis 1-2, let's speculate for just a moment. Every primitive religion in its hieroglyphics, every primitive culture in its hieroglyphic, has as its symbol of divinity a holy mountain. Every culture in the world seeks to find God and place Him on a holy mountain. When, after the flood, somebody remembered, and that's easy because Noah and Shem and Japheth and Ham and their wives remembered the way it was before the flood, they sought to build a tower to God. Now, they must have had some conception of an approach to God via a holy mountain. In the memory traces of mankind, wherever you find him, this holy mountain dominates. Now, we know before the flood, the earth was not as it now is, if the Bible is true. There was a firmament above, and waters gathered together in this firmament. When you looked up in the morning, a plastic waterbed overhead. Now, that's a ludicrous example, but I don't know what a firmament is. it was something that God created that held water above. Never had rained. There was no rain. I've wondered, I can tell, I've done this before, I've wondered many times, was the earth completely surrounded by the most beautiful fishbowl you've ever seen? Were fish swimming around in the firmament? I mean, you know, you get up in the morning and look up and there's old Guppy. Instead of a sunrise, you see Guppy. And when the sun comes up, you know, the rays go through that firmament and the fish is swimming around. I mean, it's no harder for me to believe that than to believe the firmament theory. What in the hell is a firmament? It was full of water and it was overhead. I mean, that makes you want to be a mirror maid. I mean, you live in constant terror if it springs a leak. Where do you go? Now, maybe there was just one outlet through the firmament, the mountain of God. Did these sons of God dwell on that mountain? And was there some kind of connection with heaven, whatever heaven is? Was there one mountain that went up past the firmament? Because we know when the flood came, it didn't just rain, my friend. The fountains of the deep gushed forth and the firmament broke and gushed down. I may bring here, next time I do a live festival, somebody calculated how much rain, how many inches a minute must fall to simply flood the earth in the number of days it rained to the footage that would cover Mount Everest. You know, those things, it's like calculating the reproductive rate of the Jews or the Israelites and the Jews when they went into the Promised Land. You know, people read the Bible through in 72, they never stop and figure out how many inches of rain must fall per day, per hour, per minute to cover so many feet of mountains to make the flood occur if it rains for so many days. Rain is measurable, you know. A staggering amount of rain falling for the number of days the Bible says it rained wouldn't make a dent in covering up Mount Everest. But I want to tell you, if the rain was the firmament splitting and the whole bucket that surrounded just... We've talked on this before. Maybe that's why they live so long. Sun's rays filtered through the firmament and the aging process of the sun didn't affect them when the firmament was there. There was no rain. The pattern of condensation, evaporation and condensation, the cycle of rain and evaporation didn't occur. One giant hothouse, if you will. Controlled environment. Controlled temperature. Earth surrounded. Maybe that old Babylonian, Sumerian viewpoint of the earth was right in the sense of the earth being one big air bubble. You know, some people think those giants were climbing Mount Everest and worrying about the snow and ice. There wasn't any. I mean, poor old Noah building an ark because it's going to rain is about as hard for him to get into his brain as me figuring out how Adam could say after Eve was created, you leave your father and mother, when he didn't know he had one. He didn't even have a belly button. Neither did she. Ribs don't make belly buttons. Most people do not think when they read the Bible. You're not supposed to. You're supposed to take your brain, lay it on a table, and just read it through. No belly button. I mean, if you ever meet a woman with no belly button, get nervous. And if she's got an apple in her hand, run like hell. I mean, the earth was different. You know, I've been going almost 2 hours. What if Atlantis was that mountain of God? What if Eden was there? What if there is a factual basis for this story, elaborated in much telling by the time it reaches Plato? Then maybe we ought to study it some more. And something happened in one terrible, when there came violent earthquakes and floods, the entire valiant generation of your people was swallowed up by the earth, and the island of Atlantis was similarly swallowed by the sea and vanished in a single dreadful day and in a single dreadful night. Sea was no longer navigable. It turned into a sea of mud. The remains of the island sank. Now, Alfred Wegener has received some acceptance with his theory of continental drift and the origins of the Atlantic Ocean. Come here with your camera. You see, the crusts of the earth are not just like eggshells totally on the outside. They're kind of like eggshells, and there's a softer substance underneath that can move. And the continents are like icebergs moving on a more liquid substance underneath. And Wegener's theory is that the continents through the centuries have been drifting apart. Now come in close so you can see. Here, for example, is North America, South America, Africa, and Europe. And see how they sort of fit together there? And over the centuries, they've been drifting apart. So we get Antarctica down here, drifted apart. You're starting to pull apart there where you have the Persian Gulf. And South America is pulled apart from this little spot here, the little section there around the Horn of Africa where it used to fit. And get both of them if you can, Mike. See, they've just drifted apart like icebergs on a molten, not quite, just sort of a quasi-liquid substance underneath. They have started pulling apart. And you end up, eventually, with them pulled far enough apart, you get a big Atlantic Ocean. Only problem is, even though Atlantis has been poo-pooed by scientists, Wegener's theory has gained some approval. But when you go up here and look at it, there's a big hole in the middle. It just doesn't quite fit. There was another bunch of land there, if the continental drift theory is true, that filled that hole. Then the earth was surrounded by water. And God divided the earth, water and land. You take Atlantis and put it in there, you don't have this lake here when it's all shoved together before it starts to drift. You let Atlantis fall to the bottom of the ocean. Now see, there are crusts. There are cracks in the crust. One of the theories for Atlantis is that not only... Now here's the Straits of Gibraltar. Now here's Atlantis. Now here's some islands, and here's the continent of Americas. There are cracks. Not only are these things drifting, but some work of God, whether he used natural phenomenon or otherwise in the cataclysm, broke this crack open so that the whole thing slipped down. Now we got down on the Atlantic Ocean floor. This great gulch with the peaks coming here Azores Island will sort of stick out at the top now. It all dropped down as the fountains of the deep broke open, as well as the firmament breaking up above. And in one terrible day, disappeared. I'm boring you. I mean, we've been at it 2 hours. In the further course of this dialogue, which lasted several days, Croesus painted a vivid picture of the island of Atlantis. Its nature, its inhabitants, its cities, especially the capital with the royal castle, gave all the details from the accounts handed down by the Egyptians through Solon and Croesus the Elder. The original king had an only daughter who married Poseidon, who had twin sons, several of them. 5 times he begat twin sons, divided the island of Atlantis into 10 parts. The oldest was Atlas, whom we continually see in mythology holding the earth up. And isn't it interesting that off the Horn of Africa, not anywhere else, but off the Horn of Africa, by this Atlantic Ocean, you have the Atlas Mountains, who remember something. Why are they called the Atlas Mountains? As they look out on this ancient area of Atlantis. I have a picture book of Atlantis reconstructed as described by this ancient storyteller. Not only do you have this helicopter view looking down on it, I got a whole picture book. They've redesigned the whole thing. I think I'll bring that. But not only do you have Atlantis, I mean, looking like a cross, as Poseidon, who married the daughter of the first ruler and built this castle on the mountain at the center and surrounded it with water and land alternating, and then they built bridges, and you end up with the cross-like nature of Atlantis. They built amazing monuments on this city. Now, what if that was the mountain of God that pierced the firmament, that is the source in every culture of looking for gods on the mountain, and a great God who's over all of them, but all these above men, sons of God, who come down and mate with the women? Most of the mythological ideas carry forward that concept. If you make the polytheistic gods on the mountain of God rule by some supreme God, analogous to the sons of God who came down and mated the watchers, who came down and mated the daughters of men, you're not too far off from mythology. They just embellished it. I'm boring you. Let me read to you that chapter I was looking for in this Book of Enoch, the apocryphal Book of Enoch. You can get it from here if you can't find it somewhere else. Chapter 105, page 92. After days, my son Methuselah took a wife for his son Lamech. Enoch writing. She became pregnant by him, brought forth a child. Describes his appearance, and Lamech, his father, was afraid of him. Flying away, came to his own father Methuselah and said, I've begotten a son, a changed son. He's not human, but resembling the offspring of the angels of heaven. Now, considering the fact that these sons of God were running around having affairs, it sounded to me like he was questioning his wife right there. So he says to Methuselah, I'm afraid lest something miraculous should take place on earth in his day. It's the father of Noah talking. He says, now, my father, let me entreat and request you to go to our progenitor Enoch and to learn from him the truth, for his residence is with the angels, or more accurately, the watchers. When Methuselah heard the words of his son, Lamech, who was frightened at the birth of Noah, he came to me at the extremities of the earth, for he had been informed that I was there. Was he there building the pyramid? It's an interesting book. No, it's a very interesting book. Second chapter is the one that Jude quotes. Behold, he comes with 10,000 of his saints to execute judgment upon them and destroy the wicked, reprove all flesh for everything which the sinful and ungodly have done committed against him. You won't find that anywhere in the Old Testament. Jude's quoting this book.